I'm Alan Walker, and in this episode of the People Podcast, I interviewed Chris Herron and James Dalton of Visibly on the topics of culture and engagement. We heard how companies can bridge the gap between perceived, actual and desired cultures, organisational subcultures, the needs, wants and desires of employees, how organisations can get better at engaging their teams, and a whole heap more on this topic. Enjoy!
Please take your seats. This evening's performance is about to begin.
Hi, Chris. Hi, James. Welcome to the People Podcast.
Hi, Alan. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Hiya.
No worries at all. Welcome. We don't do many of these. I was going to call it a three-way, but that might offend a few people. But you know what I mean? A three-person podcast. So bear with me throughout this. For those that don't know you, it might be worth you just giving us a quick intro. Chris, perhaps you could go first.
Yeah, sure. So my name's Chris Herron, and I'm the CEO and founder of the culture platform Visibly.
Okay, and James?
Yeah, hi, everybody. My name's James Dalton, and I'm the Director of Engagement at Visibly.
Ah, two Visibly-ers. Have you given yourself a title like Googlers yet?
Not yet. We might do.
There's an interesting challenge.
You'll need to. All the hip, cool kids do.
We're not that hip or cool, Alan, to be honest. So, you know.
Speak to yourself.
Fair enough. So, for the uninitiated, I'm reasonably familiar with Visibly. I'm not going to pretend I'm not to the audience, but I still don't think I could necessarily boil it down into a 30-second, this is what it is. So, for those that are listening, perhaps give us a quick overview of Visibly, and then we could talk about why Visibly came about and its background a little bit later.
Yeah, sure. So Visibly is a cloud platform. It's a software as a service. And essentially, we are a culture and employee engagement platform. And so really what that means is that what we're trying to actually do is kind of change the way that people are actually driving their culture. So up until now, organizations have really been quite reactive. Something happens like COVID-19, and then suddenly they've got to change the way they work. They've got to change the way they engage and communicate with their employees. And so what we've tried to build is a platform, a collaborative platform that enables organizations to really grab data from both internal and external points. So anything from social media data to employee engagement data to brand monitoring, and bring it all into one platform. And then we deliver the communication tools and the engagement tools then to drive the culture in a direction that's positive for that business.
And James, how did you become involved with Visibly?
Oh, there's a long and tattered question. My background really for the last sort of 30 years has been in people and engagement and culture and measuring that the impact, particularly of employee engagement. And I suppose I've come across lots of different platforms and routes and ways of looking at employee data and getting people involved in the business, communicating, creating that sort of open, nurturing culture. But I've never really found a platform that I would want to hang my coat on, because there was always something missing. I guess through a series of synchronicities, Chris and I came into contact with each other, and I saw Visibly. And for me, I kept asking myself the question, what does the system not do that I would want it to do? Prior to starting my own business as a consultant, I worked in industry for many, many years and procured lots of different solutions. I never really found one that meets that I had. And when I saw Visibly, and I kept asking Chris the questions, does it have chat? Does it do pulse surveys? Can people talk to each other on it? Are they able to post their opinions and ideas? Is the company able to communicate back? All of the questions were, yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yes, it does do this, that. So absolutely, I got involved with Chris, and we've developed some really, really good employee engagement survey, which uses our 4E's model. Maybe we'll talk about that a bit later. A culture gap survey, so people can measure the gap in their desired culture to the actual lived-in experience of people. But ultimately, for me, a platform is just a platform. It's a tool. And for me, what Visibly enables people to do is to get a real feel for their culture and for their people. You know, the daily lived-in experience of the individual in their job is the critical thing. You know, what is it like to work somewhere, and does it actually match the requirements that, you know, maybe the top board have set this marvelous mission, vision, and values, but actually is that the lived-in experience? Visibly enables you to measure that, but also to drive that culture and to, you know, on an hourly basis, if needs be, measure how that's impacting on people. So for me, it's... If I had had it when I was head of engagement for a very large international business, it would have given me a fantastic tool that I could have used there, but it didn't exist then.
Okay. So moving aside from the platform itself and actually onto the topics of engagement and culture, Chris, why is culture important to organisations?
Yeah, well, it's a big question, isn't it? I mean, it's the thing is about culture, it's intangible. It's quite hard to describe. And if you ask 10 different people what's the culture, they'll probably give you 10 completely different responses. And so, you know, in terms of how important it is, I think in terms of where we're now going, in terms of the future of work, you know, organizations more than ever need to be very clear about who they are and what they stand for. And, you know, we know that there are all sorts of things that are impacting organizations' ability to deliver on their mission and vision, you know, whether it's COVID-19, whether it's multi-generations in the workplace, whether it's globalization, the acceleration of technology and digitalization. You know, there are multiple internal and external factors that are impacting the workplace right now, and whether people want to join an organization and also whether or not they want to stay working for that organization. And so organizations just need to be really clear about who they are and what they stand for and what their purpose is, because otherwise they're going to struggle to attract and retain the people they need actually to deliver on their own mission and vision. So a culture gives that. It gives organizations the ability to nurture the behaviors, but also to demonstrate who and what types of skills they want within the business and to retain those skills.
Mm-hmm. Okay. James, do you think a culture is something you define, or is it something that is just it is what it is, and you can understand it?
I think it's as Chris said, it's the perception of the individuals who work within the business, isn't it? You know, I think, you know, certainly the crisis that we've been going through has been there's a real, you know, potentially a say do gap between what people have experienced in their business and how they've actually been treated. So the businesses that will succeed and retain their people are those that have shown that they care, they've communicated well, they've enabled people to work remotely, they've thought about how do we keep people motivated, and those who, you know, maybe they say, you know, maybe the poster on the wall is a great mission, vision, and values, but actually they've ignored people throughout the process. So it's been, for me, this last period has been a real test for companies. You know, do they actually do what it says on the tin? Do they care? Do they listen? Do they communicate well? Are people at the heart of everything they do, which is normally one of the values that people have on the wall? That lived-in experience is being really tested. And I think what we might find, you might have an opinion on this, Chris, is that when we come out of this, returning to, or as the new normal becomes apparent, I think a lot of people will go, you know what, I thought this was a great company, but actually you ignored me through the whole process. I want a future that I can be certain of. And I think the recruitment market potentially will have lots of people going on to it. Whether people will be recruiting or not is another matter. Mm-hmm. But that lived-in experience of the culture is so important. And as I often say to people, as Chris rightly said, you ask 10 people, you get 10 different opinions. It's their perception of how you treat them. You know, people almost have a relationship with the company as if it's an individual person. What's the voice of the company? How does it treat me? How do I feel? How does the business help me with uncertainty and through tough times? How does it develop me for the future? You know, and we all want to be able to predict to a certain degree where we're going in our careers and our lives. And I guess lastly, the crisis has put things into perspective for people. you know, I think there are a lot of people whose primary focus was probably work. And I think this has caused people to look within, you know, close the door, draw up the drawbridge and say, what is actually important to me? Well, it is my family, being safe. It is caring for those that I love. And work actually isn't as important as I thought it was. So there's an awful lot of reprioritization and rejuggling for companies to come to terms with from a psychological perspective. As we emerge, you know, from the lockdown and businesses start to get back up and working again.
I think the other really...
Some organisations have had to make those changes very, very much on the fly almost.
Absolutely.
And react and respond differently. And that's okay in the short term, but actually changing the kind of the deep embedded culture in an organisation isn't something you can do in the space of a couple of months, of course. I guess one of the other challenges is that there's sometimes a big disconnect between the perceived culture from leadership, and I'm talking, you know, true leadership here, C-suite leadership, and their understanding of what they think their business's culture is, and the actual culture.
Yeah. Yeah, often. And that, you know, this is why we look at the culture gap. This is, you know, you've got to start with listening. I mean, that's always the first place you start before you're going to change anything in any organization. And so this is why we ask the management, the C-suite, you know, what do you think your culture is? What do you think the right culture is for you to have competitive advantage in the marketplace as well? And then we ask the employees, okay, now tell us really what the culture is. And that's how we're able to assess that culture gap. And it's so important for organizations to know what that gap is, if there is any. And inevitably, there always is.
And once you've identified that gap, assuming there is, and like you say, inevitably, there almost always is,
yeah.
How does an organisation go about bridging that gap if they want it to be different? So if their perception or what they wish the culture to be is different to that of how the employees actually see the culture, what do you do? Do you shift towards actually realigning your perception? Or do you think actually we need to change as a business to drive towards the culture that we wanted it to be?
Good question. James, do you want to take that one or do you want me to?
I think that the culture gap is always a really interesting one because you have to be a brave organisation to want to ask the question to start with. And a lot of businesses, you know, they may well do an annual survey and do very little with it. The C-suite who really care will listen and look at what people are saying to them because they know, you know, if you go back to what Richard Branson says, if I look after my people, then actually they'll look after my customers. Ultimately, if you've got motivated and engaged people, your business is going to run much better. So if you've defined what you want your culture to be, then you have to have a stepped approach as to how you're going to get there and be brave enough to say to people, okay, so thanks very much for telling us. We know we're doing this well, but actually, you know, we know there are some things that we could do better. And the key there is actually involving them in the design and the process and in making it better.
Yeah, totally. I would just add another thing in there as well, Adam, which is that a lot of the organisations that I've been speaking to that are quite large organisations, they're moving away from this idea of huge culture change in one big sort of wave. You know, that kind of idea of going from A to B, and that you know the culture that we want is a fixed target. That doesn't really exist anymore, and because the world is changing so rapidly, organisations are becoming much more iterative in the way that they move towards their ideal culture, what they perceive to be their ideal culture. And, you know, this is why we're seeing now this kind of push towards agile cultures and agile methodology in terms of how organizations work.
And I think if you're also going to have subcultures in an organization, aren't you?
Absolutely.
And depending on geography, function, skill set, seniority, even maybe. And that in itself can be a moving target as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think for me, it's also understanding what people need and want from work, you know, and that has changed over the last 10 to 15 years where people want meaning. They want to feel as though they're making a difference. They want to feel as though they're taking part. So, right, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, people had maybe a job for life and they didn't have much input and they, they did their job and they went home. What people want from the world of work now is very different, and the way they want to be communicated with and involved in the business has changed. People want to be part of the business. They want to have their voice heard. They want to know what's going on. And the battle for talent that we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years, if people don't get that, then they will move. Yeah. I think some statistics that I read recently showed that people were waiting maybe 5 years before a career move. Then it went to 3, then it went down to 2. And where people are dissatisfied, particularly the younger generations, they will only stay with the business for around about 18 months before they go, you know what, I gave you an opportunity to say what you were going to do, how great it was going to be here, but actually the lived-in experience is very different. So turnover is a really good way of, particularly looking at it from a demographic perspective, looking at the turnover of age groups can be a real indicator of where your lived-in experience of what you say you're going to be, maybe through your employer value proposition. You know, we're a great business, we're open, we're inclusive, et cetera, et cetera. We'll develop you for the future. But actually the lived-in truth of it is very, very different to what people are actually experiencing.
And this also opens up another quite interesting problem, which is that if you know that your workforce are going to be in and out of the business within 24 months, at least the majority of them, how do you get those people onboarded, up to speed and buying into the culture quick enough for them to actually make an impact on the business? Otherwise they become a pure cost. So it's opening up lots of other problems and doors that we probably didn't have 20 years ago.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. It's quite interesting, though, on that point about the younger generations and their needs, wants and desires. I was chatting to Steve Ward from Universe, from the big employer branding agency, mm-hmm. a few weeks back for this podcast. And they do research of millions of students. They've got some really interesting data, and it's valid because of the scale of it. And he was telling me there's been a bit of a change in the last few months rather than the last few years, where younger people, to give them that definition, are actually starting to shift a little bit more now towards looking for stability within an organization and careers, more so than they were maybe a year ago. So, and that came before the crisis, actually. Mm-hmm. People are starting to think about longer term careers with the same employer, whereas that wasn't a big driver for them at all, even 12 months ago. And I'm wondering whether COVID and what we're going through right now in terms of the crisis is going to accelerate that even more so. So we might actually come full circle eventually, yeah. And people start looking at careers again a little bit differently. I still think they'll want all of those things you mentioned, James, about wanting to feel that sense of belonging and that they're valued and they're listened to and they're part of the business and that their voice is heard. I think that's a given, and that will be different to maybe my generation when we first started going into work. But I think some of the other things around the job hopping, maybe, and moving from employer to employer very readily and very easily, maybe that will change.
I think what the crisis has forced people to reflect on things that perhaps they wouldn't necessarily have done had it not happened. If you look at some of the research that Dr. David Rock did from the Neuro Leadership Institute, One of the five elements that gives us psychological safety and makes us feel safe and rewarded is certainty. And absolutely, you know, every single person in the country has been forced to deal with a future that they can no longer be certain of. Will my job be there? Will my company survive? Mm. Are my family safe? Am I going to get ill? So people have been forced into reflecting it on an uncertain future, which potentially they haven't had to do so before.
There is some positives coming out of this as well, which I think are quite interesting, which a lot of people haven't talked about, which is obviously we know that the gig economy was growing before COVID-19 anyway. But, now there's going to be more jobs that are going to be allowed to work from home or remotely. Are we going to start seeing people saying, well, do you know what? I'm not sure if I want to live in London anymore. I think I'll go and live in the countryside, where if a pandemic does hit again, I'm going to have, the wide expanse of open fields and blue sky and not be in the middle of a cityscape. So are we going to see people moving out of the big cities potentially?
Possibly. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. In fact, yeah, I think there's a very good chance of that. And actually, that will probably lead to a better distribution of wealth and opportunity and all of those type of things. I think it's a great leveler, the situation we're going through right now, because it, you know, you some of the kind of networks that people might have gained advantage through that were inherently unfair because not everybody had access to those networks, and many of them physical, many of them involving certain types of socializing and certain activities and things like that. Some of those won't disappear forever, but they've been reduced. And even the chat around the coffee machine, the water cooler with your mate from the senior leadership team who might be able to give you a bit of a nudge up if you apply for a role in the future. Those kind of conversations and reactions and behaviours might be reduced. And I think in a way that's a positive thing.
I reenact that in my house. I meet my wife at the sink now. We have a quick, we have a quick chat and then go back to the office.
Does she keep telling you you've got no chance of promotion, Chris?
Yes, all the time.
Get back to work.
The word loser came up 4 times yesterday, which is slightly disconcerting.
Earlier on, chaps, you mentioned something called the 4 E's model. What is that?
So I'll jump in there, Chris,
Yeah, absolutely. You invented it, so yeah, go on.
So there's loads of models out there, and about 3 years ago, I got to the position where I thought, you know what, there's a bit like when I came across Visibly and couldn't find anything that was missing. Of all the engagement models that I've seen out there, there was always something missing, whether it was investors in people or whatever it happened to be. So I thought, well, you know, I've been doing this for long enough. Let's try and put all that learning, all that experience of the last sort of 25, 30 years into something that covers exactly, you know, from my experience of, you know, my largest job, I had over 125,000 people that I was responsible for the engagement strategy for. And engagement in and of itself, you know, isn't really enough. You know, engagement measures somebody's motivation to want to do a great job, to feel as though they belong, to feel energized in what they do. But that, if you don't think about the other E's, which I'll mention in a second, then it's not enough just to have motivated people. So I thought, okay, so what are the key things? So the other two of there's 4 E's, but there's 3 that are active. So engagement is great, but you also need to be able to enable people so that they have the skills, the knowledge, the tools, the equipment, the teams to actually transfer that level of engagement into action. And if you don't enable people, then all you get is people who are frustrated. And they will either leave the organization because they go, you know what, I want to do a great job, but you're not letting me do it. Or maybe more damagingly, they'll stay and become disengaged. But on top of that, you know, not only are they engaged and enabled, but you need to empower people. And again, going back to the work of Dr. David Rock, if people have autonomy and control over themselves and their work and their customers or their teams or the people who work for them or with them, the combination of engaging, enabling, and empowering, actually, if you get those 3 things right, you know, you have a motivation, you've got the tools and the knowledge you need to do it, and you've got the ability to make decisions and influence the service that you give or the service that you provide, then, you know, the critical elements of those 3 E's together give you a brilliant workforce, and nobody else looks at all 3 of those together. And the 4th E is to evaluate, constantly listen, to constantly get feedback. Is it working? What do we need to change? How do we need to flex? And to celebrate when things go well, you know, make sure you're recognizing and rewarding people, that people's effort is being noticed, and, you know, whether it's informal or formal thanks. So our, you know, the 4 E's model is integrated into the Visibly employee survey that we have available on the site, and we measure actively each one of those 4 things, and the outputs come out either as engage, enable, or empower, and we have actions that people can suggest, and they can add to their actions. And obviously what Visibly enables you to do is to evaluate all the time through single pulse questions, series of pulse questions, Getting people's opinions, ideas, it enables you to have a great way of collecting innovative ideas through the business as well. The combination, particularly of engage, enable, and empower, which nobody else is doing. They'll either look at engagement and enablement, or they'll look at engagement and empowerment, but they don't combine them. And for me, that was the missing trick. Which is why this model is so powerful. And behind each one of those enablers, engage, enabler, empower, we have a series of things that we look at through the surveys or the pulse questions that we've got. So businesses can really look at, in granular detail if they want to, at specific areas in their business.
Excellent. Sounds very powerful. So, guys, I'm mindful of time. We do try and keep the podcast to around the 25-minute mark, and we've easily filled that. We could probably chat again for another 15, 20 minutes, but I'm mindful of the audience. So, thanks so much for your time, Chris, James.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
No problem at all. And maybe we can share some links when we put the podcast out to maybe the 4E's model and Visibly, and we'll put some of that in the copy.
Yeah.
So thanks again, and I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Head over to chattalent.com for more blogs, vlogs, webinars, and other great content about HR, talent, and recruiting. Everything you could possibly need. Enjoy.